I see that the UK right now, just looking at like from country to country, that they're producing looks like half of the world's wind energy. And so I'm just wondering what's going on with offshore wind in the United Kingdom, and then what are some of the lessons that we could learn here in Delaware?
Well, there's quite a few things going on. One is certainly the fact that it's an island and that it has the best wind in the world, continuous and constant and consistent, I guess would be the right word. And it blows hard enough where it generates a lot of electricity. So the investment has been made and committed to by the United Kingdom to expand its offshore wind generation capacity, I think to eventually wean itself from fossil fuel. They've realized, I think, that the British have retaken the lead on, I guess, on innovation. We've sort of been sluggish in our willingness to understand that it's not all about dollars and cents and the cost in the moment of a kilowatt hour, but what it is about long-term sustainability of course and a balance of that cost against the environmental consequences and certainly against the legitimacy of fossil fuel generation capacities for electricity.
And I did want to follow up on this because if you are just looking at pure kilowatt hour costs, then I was looking at a graph and it does look like offshore wind is one of the more expensive ways to produce that energy. And then it's also you're dependent on when the winds are blowing as opposed to something like nuclear that you can always have going 24/7. But there is this investment in wind energy in the United Kingdom and then also with Rick Perry in Texas. And I saw that Texas and Oklahoma are some of the leading producing wind states. So what is kind of driving this switch to offshore wind? Is it this renewable energy source?
Well, I think in the case of the United Kingdom, and certainly in the case of Texas and Oklahoma, it's the appreciation of wind being a consistent generator of electricity and also, in the long run, eventually a cheaper generation capacity. But they have much, much more onshore wind per capita than I think that even we have in the United States. And that's certainly to take advantage of the offshore wind prospects, you're going to get much more consistency and sustainability of generation capacity because the winds are blowing constantly offshore.
Yeah, and I was reading this paper, too, that was saying that off the coast of Delaware, this mid-Atlantic bight is what they were calling it, that being able to have this interconnected series of wind turbines up and down the coast from Virginia to Rhode Island would be able to produce enough energy for all of the United States. Is that the amount of energy we would be able to get? Or
No, I think that it's a very healthy goal that we could accomplish with offshore wind only. Providing of 20% of the East Coast electric needs. Now, the consequence of that is that the East Coast of the United States consumes the most electricity. So to be able to displace the need for fossil fuel generation of the kilowatt need is certainly something that we should be looking at, and that could expand, I guess you call it exponentially. My ambition, I think the world's ambition should be that we have those things that are generated by renewables accessible through a grid. All of these things can't help but help relieve the pressures of the demand for electricity. And the demand for electricity, as much as we try to reduce our use of electricity, is never going to just go away. We're always going to need electricity.
Yeah, and I just want to touch on a couple more of the potentials for wind energy and then kind of get into a little bit of some of the hurdles that we have to get over to maybe make this a reality on the East Coast. You're looking at not just creating energy, but that also this could bring manufacturing jobs, maintenance jobs, administrative jobs. What is the potential for that with, I guess, scaling up a clean energy like offshore wind off the coast of Delaware?
I think the potential is unlimited. Now, when I say unlimited, I mean in that area. There's a couple opportunities. One, the immediate opportunity would be if we use the United Kingdom's pipeline. It's established where they're making the products there. They're importing the turbines from Germany, but they can send it over here fully accompanied by the assets to install it. What that does is in the immediate thing, it gives us jobs for installation and jobs for maintenance and jobs for operation. And those would be here. That would be the immediate. Now, I've talked to Siemens, who manufactured the turbines, I guess about 6-7 years ago when I was in a conference in Washington, D.C. And I just explored with them what would be the mindset of expanding offshore wind, not just to Delaware, but along the entire East Coast. And they said if they could get that big a commitment for a market share for their product, they would move their facilities, some of their facilities, manufacturing these turbines, the gearboxes, and the other things to the United States, because that's where it is. It's cheaper than shipping it.
I see. Yeah. So rather than shipping it across the ocean, they would just move and start manufacturing
exactly,
here.
Exactly. It's not a easy feat to ship these things even out to the site. It's remarkable. I think I was told at one of the meetings that the ships, the installation ships, they could put one of them up in less than 24 hours at sea.
Oh, wow.
So you can imagine the opportunity for job growth, for people manning the ship, the port facility in Delaware. And I don't like to isolate Delaware because that was my dream if we were the first ones. If we were the first ones in place 8 years ago, with the power purchase agreement we had that people would die for today, to have that same kind of power purchase agreement. If we didn't run into problems and had integrated that into our folks, we would be sitting, you know, perfectly for job creation here. So my intention, my hope is that we can bring the enthusiasm and the less restrictive atmosphere of the UK product, the way they've done it here, because I think it's like a $1 billion investment they made in Hull. And the consequences of that was in Hull, England, where they had a 15.6, I think, unemployment rate, they're down to 3.5 now.
Oh, wow.
So it's almost miraculous what can be accomplished.
I'm speaking with Delaware State Representative John Kowalko about a recent trip he took to the United Kingdom to learn how they became a world leader in offshore wind production. Doing a little bit of research, I was seeing Governor John Carney. He's a big supporter of wind energy. And then even Rick Perry, who's now running the energy department, I read this quote that President Trump told him, "I want you to do for American energy what you did for Texas." And Texas now produces more wind energy than the next three states combined. And so the winds politically could be blowing in the right direction to get this going in the future. Is that how you see it, or do you still see
I see it that way, except that I was given pause when I saw a recent headline, I think it was USA Today, probably 2 weeks ago, and it referred to Trump thinks that offshore wind power is ugly, meaning aesthetically, you know what I mean? Which is probably based on the argument he was making in England
on
the Scottish golf course. I'll be honest with you, I don't think the man I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I don't think he has an appreciation of aesthetics or a knowledge of what is aesthetically appealing or what would be apparent aesthetically. Unfortunately, we have to get beyond that. And I don't think that he's positioned to stop this, but now we have to get a little enthusiasm in the rest of the government. A couple of things that stood in the way of the development off the coast of Delaware. One was a failure to have a permit system which could be expedited here. When all the work was done on the site and it was shown that it's consistent, that it's not going to disaffect the environment or the ecology, the permit should have been expedited then.
And these are federal permits, right?
Yes, federal permits, yeah, when you're going off into federal waters. And that's an obstacle that should be overcome and should be less politicized.
One thing that I did want to touch on, too, is that I think came up when you were in the United Kingdom during those 5 days is opposition from fisheries, the shipping industry, and environmental groups worried about the impact of large wind farms off the coast and what that might be for birds or marine animals or even being able to navigate ships into ports.
Yeah, and they have a system set up there that's, I think, very specific. They insist on all the projects that there's a pathway through for major shipping. So they've actually overcome the question that has been asked many times, is what if it's in a major shipping lane? Some of those are in major shipping lanes, but they have the permits issued and the agreement of the installers that they're going to have a wide enough shipping lane between us that they can go back and forth. They said that most of the fishermen exceptions are being answered, and certainly I think they've they've stopped a project here or there with concerns about that. But they, most of the fishermen's concerns would be if they run into one of these things, and they'd have to be pretty poor captains to run into these things.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have an agency that actually separately evaluates these things before they're given final approval. And that's the Maritime Coast Guard.
I see. Yeah, and I saw the pictures in that, so that. These, the turbines, they're separated enough where a ship looks tiny compared to these things.
Yeah.
It's almost like roads going between power lines. Like,
exactly.
You don't even think about
exactly.
it.
And that's one of the problems they're trying to address now with the floating platforms and the cable systems as far as, and that certainly hasn't been, addressed, but it's been being considered as we speak. How would the four anchoring cables on a be in the face of migratory patterns of whales, for instance?
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean, undersea. I mean, you could. You know, that has to be a consideration. But yeah, there it's an ongoing, thought process, and with given consideration to protect the environment, number one, and to protect the industries that may be disaffected, to answer their questions, to answer their concerns, to certainly look into it.
Is there a realistic time frame? I know that this is all intangible at the moment. I mean, what are the next steps? Is there something that you're taking to the governor? Is there something that may help get this going soon in the near future here on the East Coast?
I think my task here is to bring back the message in a more simplified form of the advantages, how they're doing it, how they're taking advantage of those of the situation in UK, how they've managed to facilitate these things, show just for the record the precipitously dropping costs per megawatt hour of offshore wind, and then if you make it a favorable government atmosphere. I mean, you'll get companies that will salivate over the opportunity to come here. I said it over there in England as we talked. I told them about our power purchase agreement we had in Delaware, which we went through about a year of stutter stepping to finally get signed by all parties. And I said, if I had that piece of paper in hand, that's expired, I think, a year and a half ago. And NRG was the last owner of that. Blue Water Wind was the original owner. And if I had that piece of paper in hand now and handed it to a company like Siemens or E.ON or one of these other companies or corporations that's building these offshore wind, they would jump in a heartbeat at being able to just change some of the numbers in there and say, here you go. We agree to this. I mean, that's an investment. That was an investment possibility, a legitimate investment possibility for 3.3, I think, megawatts at the time. These things generate 9 now. Eight and a half megawatts, 9, and they think they're going to go over 10 each unit. It just gives you a lot of hope that not only is the cost going to become dramatically lower, but also we're going to have a much more bigger effect on our needs, our generation needs, and I want the United States to be part of that.
Representative Cuoco, thanks so much for talking about this with me today.
My pleasure, certainly, and I thank you for having the interview, and I guess our British forefathers finally have a chance to show us something new as far as a lesson plan, you know?